Welcome to Season 2. This is Episode 8, Authentic Movement.
So one of the most rewarding things about Jazz Antiqua Dance and Music Ensemble is that we tell stories. This is from my favorite piece. It's from a piece called Elevation. The music was composed by a wonderful local composer, Brian Schwartz. And the piece describes the relationship of a man and a woman who've been together, but they're kind of just going through the motions. It starts with two chairs on either side of the stage, and they're slowly moving in towards each other. And as the piece goes along, they try and connect. They try and remember those things from their relationships, the moments where they loved each other, the moments where they hated each other, the moments where things were going so well or where they just felt themselves kind of drifting into a monotony. All of these moments happening, like in every relationship, you have your ups and you have your downs. And then throughout the piece, these things occur, and by the end, they try and make that one last effort to bring themselves together and realize that it's too late. And so just like the piece started, with the chairs and the dancers coming towards each other in the center, it ends with them slowly circling and moving their way out, finally making that decision to stay that way.
Welcome to the Language of Creativity podcast. My guest today in the studio is Sherry Washington Roan, dancer, choreographer, singer, and voiceover artist. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, what an honor to have you here. You know, it's a funny story how we met. We were at Gerald White's sight singing class.
Gerald!
At Screen Actors Guild, and I think it was the last day, and we just said, oh, who wants to go to lunch?
Yeah, and we went to lunch, and I think we had like a two-hour lunch that day. We were there for a hot minute.
I think the service staff was laughing along at everything that was going on. It was like hilarity ensued.
That's true, because we were not quiet.
Well, it was Parnell Maricano and Stephanie Anderson and you and I, and It was basically all the theater people.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. You're right.
I should have been a theater major. All my friends were theater majors. Well, I'm very excited to speak to a dancer, because on our show, we really wanted to cover a variety of art forms. And my hope is that people can learn from each different format, even if they've never danced,
right,
if they're not familiar with the world. I was thinking about it, and dance is really one of those genres that's very dependent on another art form, which is music.
This is true. In general, this is true. Yeah. There are some dance that is done without music or to poetry or different things like that. And that's really an interesting way to work as well, especially with poets. I myself have worked with poets in the past where you're dancing to their words and there's no music. It's really just about the connection between their words and their emotion and your body and how you make that come to life. I really do love working in that way as well. But for me, as a musician, I'm a singer, as you mentioned, but I also grew up playing piano and violin. So I hear music in a very deep way and deep place. So I love connecting my movement and my body and my dancing to the movement, actually putting it with inside of it. You know, some choreographers kind of like make a dance and they just set it on top of the music. That is not how I like to work. I have a very hard time working that way. I have a hard time ignoring the music and just moving over the top of it, which is one of the reasons I love the work that I do with Jazz Antiqua Dance and Music Ensemble. That's a company I've been dancing with for 10 years, because we really try and embody the movement and get inside it and make like everything connect on the most minute levels.
It's so fun to watch. I'm not as well-versed in the dancing world. And so That's one of the things I was excited about today, was you could teach me some things about what it's like to connect on that level. But I understand that layered, emotional, felt musical connection. As a music producer, as a performer myself, I think that's what drew me to music, was that connection. And I feel like when you deliver that to an audience, that's when the magic happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Music on its own can move you in a very visceral way. Like, it can take you back. You know how you have that sense memory of certain things. Certain songs will take me to a time and place, and I'll feel the things I felt when that was going on. My son, when he was younger, if he heard a certain song, it would take him back to a movie in a moment. And, you know, music works that way. And then when you can connect that with a dancer and how they're using their body, how they're telling story and really sharing part of themselves with you. And dancing is very dependent on acting, you know, but it has to come from a true place. And that's when you really, really reach out and grab your audience. You've got that visceral music sensation, and then that person, that body that is just sending you energy and emotion from on the other end of it. And there's really nothing quite like it.
Well, you know, I guess it would be sort of related to acting in the way that you have moves that you're rehearsing, unless you're doing an improvised dance. And those moves are very specific and they require a lot of repetition. But at the same time, there's this threshold of mastery where you work on that embodiment mm-hmm. of the emotion. And
you do. You have to. You need the repetition to get the cleanliness of the choreography and the feel. But then at a certain point, you have to let that go. You have to forget about it and let your body do what it does, because your muscles have memory, just like your brain does. Your muscles remember what's going because of the repetition of practice. And then you just let it go and let it turn into something else and let the emotions take over. And then it becomes an entirely different kind of sensation. And I know for us, for our company, we actually perform with live jazz musicians quite a bit.
Oh, I bet that's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And the interesting thing about it is they never play the same thing twice. So the mood of the movement, the impetus of the movement might be in a different place from one night to the other. So it really lets you kind of free range explore, because you're vibing off of what they're doing in the moment, which isn't always going to be the same thing.
Now, we met singing.
Yes.
And you have a beautiful voice. You
Thank
also
you.
Do voiceover. Do you find that, I mean, I kind of want to ask about your professional life, because as you and I are aware of, being in the Hollywood world, you have to sort of be great at all these different things. What's that like for you? How do you manage that?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I have always been one who wanted to do things that I love to do. I love doing voiceover. I love dancing. I love singing. I actually like doing VO better than being on camera. There's a freedom you get when you don't have to worry about how you look and where's my hand and did I hit this mark and are my eyes looking this way, but is it too far that way? Like, you know, those little things that happen when you're trying to shoot something. You don't have any of that when you're doing voiceover. All you have is a mic and your voice, and you just explore and go.
And your imagination.
And your imagination, that's right. But like anybody, like everybody in Hollywood, you know, work is hard to come by sometimes. So right now I haven't been doing as much VO work as I would like to. That's one of those things I'm trying to change, you know, as the new school year begins. And I have kids, so I still work in the school year realm as opposed to the calendar year. But I've been dancing quite a bit. I've had some singing gigs this summer. I've got one coming up next weekend. I sing for a couple different bands. One is a band called Soulicious that does corporate parties, and we do everything from the 1950s to current day. And then I sing with a Fleetwood Mac tribute band called Belladonna, which is really fun.
Cool.
So, you know, there's work there. And then I also work as a instructor at a children's musical theater company called Jack's Theatricals, which has been like my most consistent work. Super fun working with the kids from elementary school through high school. And yeah, and then just rehearsing for the company and then whatever else comes up. I've got a choreography gig coming up in January that I'll probably start prepping, a play actually, that I'll start prepping probably in December. Yeah, I'm just trying to do what I can do and do things that I love.
Well, it sounds like you are doing that. And one of the reasons I was extremely excited when you said yes to this interview is that you were cast in one of my favorite stories of all time, which was from 2000 to 2003.
That's
you were part
correct,
of the original Los Angeles cast of The Lion King.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So first of all, how did you land that gig?
Auditions. It's interesting. When the show started in 1997, I was here and I was dancing for Little Washington Dance Theater. And of course, everyone who was in the performing arts, dancers, singers, especially if you were Black, when that show came about, we were all like, how do I get in on that action? And so I had sent them my resume. I went in, I auditioned here. And then I got, you know, called back, and then I didn't get hired in 1997. Oh, well, that's okay. And so in 2000, when they decided to have an LA cast, of course, performers from LA were coming out of the woodworks. People who normally only accept leading roles were like, I'll take ensemble, whatever, let's get it together.
Wow.
And through a series of auditions here, I think there were four. I ended up getting cast as a singer-dancer swing, which means you learn multiple roles. So I, through the course of my time, knew 11 different roles in the show. And whoever happened to be out because they were injured, sick, on vacation, or whatever, I would swing on in and do their part. And sometimes there were more than one person, so the swings would swing parts throughout the show. You'd
Wow.
be one person in this number and another person in that number, and on the singer end of that, you also had to swing their vocal parts.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So I loved, 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 loved doing that show because I like a challenge. I like my brain being challenged. And as a swing, it's always different. You're never going on for the same part, you know, unless it's like a week. But for a super long period of time, it's always somebody different. And it just keeps it really interesting and it keeps you on your toes. You can't kind of rest when you're going to be somebody different.
You have to know all the parts. Really,
yeah.
Does that help you as a choreographer now, having that experience of swing and doing so many parts in
a show?
You
know, it has, actually. I actually worked at Disneyland as a maintenance choreographer as well for 7 years. I started out as a performer there as a swing in Snow White. I was a porcupine. Thank you very much. And when I got pregnant with my son, I switched jobs because when you're a swing, you get kind of like an all-stage view of what's going on. You understand that if there's three dancers over here and two over here and one on the right side is gone, then you need to switch so that it's even. Like you get that kind of, you know, almost like a director's point of view. You see the whole and not just the little individual pieces.
Right.
And so that really helped me as a maintenance choreographer at Disneyland. Because we did casting, we worked on shows, we taught shows, we maintained, you know, did the daily kinds of things. So you have to look at the grid and be like, I have three princesses and I have to have some out for this amount of time and some for that amount of time. And the fuzzies, those are the people who wear the heads, can only be out for that amount of time. But you still have to fill up the whole day and have no gaps. Like we called that grid brain. So being a swing really helped me with my grid brain. It helped me understand all that and see that whole picture and be able to work it out. So I love it.
Did you meet Judy Taymor?
I did. I did meet Julie Taymor. Yeah. She worked more with the principals than she did with the ensemble, but we did get to work with her quite a bit. It was we met quite a few people.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant direction. My wife took me for my birthday 1 year. The Lion King, the original Lion King, is my all-time favorite movie ever. And I just watched the new one last week. And
how did you like it?
You know, I actually enjoyed it.
Okay.
I know it's mixed.
Yeah, I've heard a mixed bag.
I really enjoyed it because it was like reliving the original with all the music and lines, but they changed it just a little bit and the visuals were different. So it was kind of like, it was like reminiscing in a way. That's what I thought was pretty neat about it. But
okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
It's been a busy summer. It's been a very busy summer.
I barely got to see it. I had to sneak in, you know, while the kids were at school because I was like, all right, if I get to see one movie this year, I'm going to do that.
Sometimes you have to do it that way.
Yeah. It says in your bio that you were the understudy for Sarabi.
Yes.
Wow. And that was one of the leading roles.
Yes. Yeah. That was one of those things where through the process of at the beginning of rehearsals, they had auditions for understudies, and some people were already contracted as understudies for roles like Sarabi. We auditioned when we started, and so I was one of the fortunate people who got to play that role with Rufus Bonds as my Mufasa.
I have the Lion King cast recording on repeat. Like, Mamela is probably my favorite song and the reprise of that. It's just such rich, soulful, musical story.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that everybody might not know about Lion King is in all of the cast, except for Japan, there are generally 5 South Africans, performers from South Africa that come and they're part of the show. And part of the reason for that is Le Boheme, who did a lot of the music. There's a sound, a richness, a tone that they have in their voices that we don't have, that is hard to emulate. And so he wanted it to be as authentic as possible. So you have those singers and they just mix in with everybody else. And it really gives that beautiful, rich tone.
Yeah.
And it sounds different. There's something different about the way they perform, their energy, Line. The way they sing.
There's a nice round vowel. That's so, yeah.
And you can teach us what the vowels are, but the tonality, just the timbre of their voices is different. It's just different. And so it's really lovely to have that and to have them come and be a part of the family and, yeah, just to learn from them and everything. They have such a great spirit.
Walk me through some of the choreography from the show. Is that permissible? Will the Disney gods come and get us? I'm curious because,
if
you've never seen The Lion King, they have all these very intricate props.
Puppets. They're puppets, yeah.
Yeah, and so you're seeing the dancers. You're usually, what are you wearing, like morph suits or...
Depending on what you're doing, like all of the girls' costumes, depending on whether you're a dancer or a singer, they're all corsets. So they might be, you know, a leotard with like pants with a corset. And then you have your lion head. The singer heads are different from the dancer heads because the dancer heads have a silk that comes all the way down and connects to their pants, connects to their waistband. Whereas the singers, it's more... one giant silk that goes from the bottom of the head and connects to the bottom of the feet and the arms, almost like a flying squirrel.
How do you move? I would trip over it.
You know, it's well, because you have cuffs. You have cuffs on your wrists and you have cuffs on the bottom, so it keeps it away from your feet and things like that. But with the dancers, one of the most effective parts of is when they take the heads off and they bend over and put them in front of them, then the silk billows out like the back of a lion running.
Wow.
Which is really a beautiful visual when you see it. And then they just put it back on and... they're upright again. So
you're working with these giant puppets.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you had any experience with before this show?
No.
What did you have to learn?
No. There were different kinds of puppets. We had shadow puppets, which are basically like an image printed on a heavy, clear kind of almost piece of paper with a stick on the bottom. So you'd hold the stick and that's how you'd move the puppet and you could spin it and do different things like that. For the hyenas, the puppet part is the head. So you can take the head off and you can put your hand in that head actually is connected by strings to your head and you can put your hand in and make it talk. And then you have little crutches basically to be the front legs. So you're running around on your back legs and then the front 2 crutch legs and then you put your hand in the thing and you could clip the crutches together so that you can talk with the head. All sorts of different kinds. For the I Can't Wait to Be King, the female dancers had giant giraffe head puppets, which is, I don't know how long these are, probably 10 to 14 foot pole that goes into a strap on your waist, and then you get to move it down. You've got like a safety harness, and the pole clips into the harness, and the fabric covers the pole with the head on the end, and the head is loose so that when you're moving it, it kind of, when you go down and when you go up, the head kind of moves like the giraffe is dancing, like the giraffe head is dancing. That was one of the most challenging puppets. That was actually one of the first things I couldn't do once I found out I was pregnant, because I had my daughter during that show. But the weight of the puppet is right there on your stomach. So, you know, that
just
was,
below your sternum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So we put the ixnay on that as soon as I found out I was going to have a baby. But
well, my mom was jumping cars when I was in utero until she found out. She's a stunt woman.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
So what was the footwork like with those puppets? Like how was that different from a normal dance routine?
With the puppets, it was generally very simple and very planned. Very kind of basic footwork, because you really wanted to maintain your balance with the puppets, no matter which puppet it was you had. The hyenas were a little bit crazy because they tend to run around and cackling, you know, and just be crazy. So you had a little bit more freedom with that one because they were sort of wild. But with the others, it tended to be very deliberate. And it was also deliberate in how you manipulated the puppet to look like the actual animal, like the cheetah. There was a very specific way you had to move your shoulders and your feet with the puppet to make the cheetah look like a cheetah walking and not like a person holding some sticks in their hands.
It's amazing to watch. You would think that you would always be aware these are puppets, but when you're watching the show, you get into it and you completely forget that this is choreography.
Yeah.
And it's really quite a sight to behold.
And that was also one of the reasons Julie Taymor wanted the faces seen. She wanted all of the actors' faces seen, is because she wanted you to see and feel the animals, but she also wanted you to be able to see and feel the emotions of the actors portraying those parts.
It's pure magic. I can't even believe that I got to see it. So you got your start early on with dancing. You were a musician, and then you moved out here and attended Lula Washington Dance Theater.
Yeah, I started dancing with Lula 3 weeks, actually, after I moved out here. It's kind of a funny story. I came to L.A., and I had just left Indianapolis Dance Company, which is now Gregory Hancock Dance Theater in Indianapolis. And I was like, I got to take class because I want to get jobs. I can't just sit around. And Lula's studio was the one that was in the same area code that I was in. So I was like, okay, it can't be too far, which is how I happened to go to her studio. And I happened to go to her class. And so I was like, oh, this is a really great modern class. And so I kept going. And, you know, about 3 weeks in, her husband was like, so when are you going to come dance with our company? And I was like, tomorrow? Okay. Like, it was the easiest job I ever got. There was no audition. I just happened to go to her class and keep going. And her class was very difficult, very different from what I was used to doing. But I loved it, which is obviously why I kept going. And got asked to join the company and did from there. I danced with her for 4 years until I joined the cast of The Lion King.
Tell me a little bit more about your origin story regarding dance, but music as well.
Oh, my gosh. I was always that kid, that cheesy kid that wanted to perform and whatever. When I was young, my mother took me to see. My mother was actually a musician. She was a singer and a pianist, and she was a music educator with Milwaukee Public Schools for 34 years. So she was always, you know, the maven of culture. She'd take me and my cousins to see dance performances and ballet. And I saw the Nutcracker, good old Nutcracker. And I was like, I want to do that. And I was five. And so that summer, she started me in ballet classes at William Riley Academy of Ballet. And I loved it. When I graduated from kindergarten, previously to that, they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to be a dancer. And I was very sure and I was very clear about it. And that was kind of the beginning of everything. I also sang with my church choir as a child. And so I did my first singing solo when I was 7 for some church event. My mom was supposed to sing and she got laryngitis. So we worked up a song and I don't even remember what it was, some spiritual.
Huh.
And that was my first time singing in public. And, you know, anything creative, I love to do. I loved theater. I would take acting in the summer, you know, with the rec department in Brown Deer, where I grew up in Wisconsin. And that just started my path. And I've always been kind of one of those kids, even when I was younger, who was kind of goal driven. I said, I want to do this. And then I just find a way to do that. You know, I want to be the student director of the chamber choir. Are you in the chamber choir yet? No, but I wanted to be the student director. And so I just made that happen. I just did what I had to do to reach that goal. And I've always kind of been that sort of person.
Yeah.
And my daughter is that way, actually, right now.
Well, so you have 2 children. I was going to ask you about that. So as a working performer in LA, how do you balance being a mother?
Very carefully. But it's one of those things where I wouldn't trade the decisions I've made. I've always been a working performer, and I want my kids to see me doing what I love to do, but I don't want to neglect them, you know? So I haven't really taken any jobs that took me away for like months and months and months and months at a time. When I was working at Disneyland, I quit my job as a choreographer there partially because I would leave early in the morning, you know, before my kids were up or when they just got up, and I would get home at like 7:30 and have like a half an hour with them before they'd go to bed. And that just wasn't enough. I was like, I need to spend more time with my babies. And I love the fact that I get to see them off to school every day. I love the fact that I see them when they come home from school. Like, I'm the first person they see after school. I might drive them to their dance classes or their play rehearsals or whatever, and then pick them up, and then we're going to go to my rehearsal, you know?
So they're really a part of your life as a
They
artist.
Are.
Yeah, that's amazing. Are they also artistically inclined?
Oh my gosh, yes. They both are. They both want to be on Broadway. My daughter is coming from the side of, she's a dancer first, but she's a great singer and an amazing actress. So she's kind of going through that route. My son is a musician first, and he's learning to dance. He's been taking company class with my dance company this last year and really trying to get his dancing skills up, and he's been doing musicals. And so he's kind of coming from the musician singer route, you know, but they're going to the same place.
That's so cool. Is there anything that you steer them away from, having been in the industry and seen everything that you've seen?
The only thing I steer them away from is, especially as young performers, is anything like inappropriate. Like if, you know, someone sends my daughter a script and there's a ton of swearing or whatever, then I'm like, my sentiment is there's time for all that. There's time to be a grown-up. There's time to speak inappropriately. There's time to do all that. Why sully your young years
right.
with a bunch of craziness? We try and steer them towards things that we feel are appropriate.
And what are your support systems in parenting? You have a partner?
My husband, who is amazing. And he's actually an art director for a production company. So he's an artist as well, but he has like a regular job and a regular paycheck and things like that, which is nice.
With regular hours and benefits.
Yeah, exactly. Which is really nice. But he's great. He's so great and super supportive of all of us. You know, he's like, here's a plan for doing this. You guys should make a movie over the summer and you should write it and da-da-da, you know. He's really, really, really wonderful. I don't think I could do it without having that kind of support. When I would go out of town when I was younger for, you know, 3 weeks with the company or whatever, and people would be like, what about your kids? And I'd be like, they're with their dad. Well, aren't you concerned? They're with their dad. No, I'm not. He's my husband. He's their father. He loves them like I do. He will take care of them, you know?
You know, I think our partners are very important.
Yes.
Pieces of what we do as artists, because that can make or break your ability to thrive.
It's true. It's true. I'm always amazed when people marry someone who doesn't support their art. Even when we got engaged, the director of the company I was with asked my husband, he's like, so when's she going to stop dancing? And his answer was, well, I'm marrying a dancer, so she's going to dance. But a lot of people, you know, when they get married, they just like let all that go. It's like, no, that's who I am. And he understands that. And he's always been very supportive of that. So
that's one of the things I really respect about your energy. That's one of the things I really admire about my mother.
Thank
is
you.
That you have to do what you do, and somehow you've managed to be a great parent and a conscientious parent and still be authentic to who you are in life.
I want my children to be that way. You know, I want them.
It's important.
If they, you know, we weren't the parents that pushed them into the arts. My daughter was running around sticking her leg in the air for years before I ever put her in a dance class. She started really training in dance when she was 7. Most dancers that I know, as soon as that kid is 3, they're like in Dolly Dinkle's class doing whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to push my passions onto my kids. We really wanted them to discover their own. Now, we exposed them to performance and they came to see my band play and, you know, they get to see me on stage all the time and see the stuff their dad does creatively. And so there is that influence in the house. You know, we'd love for them to be creative, but we weren't trying to shove them into creative endeavors and creative careers. As it turned out, that's who they are on their own without us having to spoon feed them.
Kids come in with a mixture of the environment and nature. And I think some kids just are born with their own thing. And I think it's important to let that blossom and to expose them to a variety of things because, like, for instance, my family was in stunts, but that mm-hmm. wasn't my passion. I was passionate about music. So my parents always put music things around. And my mom played guitar and she collected musical instruments. So I had that available to discover. And that was just a side passion of hers. It was something she did to relax, but mm-hmm. it's something that became a passion of mine. And so I think that it's so cool when your kids can follow in your footsteps. And it's also cool when they don't.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons my mom, I was kind of interested in acting. And my mom's like, you can do acting when you want to do acting, but I'm not going to take you to auditions and be the stage mom. She was like, all those stage moms who are living vicariously through their kids are so putting so much pressure on their children.
Yeah.
And maybe they want to do it, maybe they don't. And that's the part that was heartbreaking to watch is when a parent decides that, well, I can't be this, but my kid's cute, so I'm going to. And that's, I think, you know, my mom just knew. She's like, that's not an environment for my kid. He's too sensitive for that. That will tear him apart.
It's interesting because I, you know, my kids have been in that environment. But I think, like anything, it starts at home. We were always very clear with our kids. You start tripping and acting a fool and all of this will go away, you know, because what's most important is that you are a decent human being.
Yes.
That just has to be the focus, not that you're a star or not that you get in that show or whatever. Like the focus has to be on the child and the person they become before the artist.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the difference. And if that's clear and that's where they're coming from, then they can be around those kids and those crazy stage moms, because we know they are crazy. And those kids who call their moms by their first name and demand a Coke or whatever.
there was the children dance show. I can't remember what it's called, but Toddlers with Tiaras or something.
Toddlers and Tiaras. Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Oof.
I've only watched like 2 episodes of that. And I was like, wow.
I can't watch.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, but I think it puts them in a better mind frame. And then when they see that, they know it's crazy. They know it's crazy. And then my kids right now are 16 and 14. So they are to the point where they have actual gratitude for how they were raised. They have gratitude for the strictness. They have gratitude that we didn't just let them watch anything they still don't have the code to our Netflix, you know?
<It's> like, good.
You know, my daughter's like, I'm going to watch this. And she's 16 already. Uh-huh. And I'm like, we'll watch it first and then we'll tell you if it's okay. Uh-huh. And that's fine. Some people think that's crazy. But like I said before, they only have so long to be kids.
There's so much out there. And innocence, it's important. You
and
know?
Once it goes away, it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
It doesn't come back.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Tangent time.
Okay.
Woo-hoo. You just got your black belt. Congratulations. In
Thank
Hapkido.
You. My second degree. Yeah.
Wow. So in addition to dancing and doing all this other full-time stuff that you do, you're also doing martial arts.
Yes.
Which means you're in phenomenal shape.
I wish I was in better shape, but I do okay. I do okay.
Hapkido, is that related to Aikido?
It is. It's another Korean martial art form. It kind of combines some of the best parts of Aikido and Taekwondo. But one of the tenets of Hapkido is circular motion. So using the opponent's energy against them. And one of the reasons I love this art form, shout out to Song's Hapkido. Love you, Grandmaster Song, is that it's a really great form for women because it's not all based on brute strength. It's really about getting your opponent's hand or arm or whatever in the right position and how you use your body to turn the tables on them during an attack. And we have takedowns, we have kicks, we have punches and rolls and all of that kind of stuff. So it's great. There's a variety of things and you can kind of figure out what works best for you. You know, it's not one of those art forms where unless you move this way, kind of like dance, like Martha Graham, her technique doesn't really work for me because I don't have super open hip sockets. So her movement hurts my body.
Which is an important part of longevity,
is
listening to your body.
So, you know, I'm not going to do that. But this is a martial art form that kind of is a mixed bag and it's got a little something for everybody. So whether you're young or old, the techniques work. You can do a front kick to the head. You can do it to the groin. You can do it to the knee. If that's as high as your leg goes, you know, if you perform the technique correctly, it's just as effective. So...
Have you ever had to use your black belt?
Fortunately not, no.
And that's why you have it.
And that's why I have it.
You know, I found a book called The Art of Peace, and that's by Master Ueshiba, who was the founder of Aikido. One of the things I liked about his philosophy was in that art form, you're actually protecting your opponent from injury. And so it's about how to use their energy that they're coming at with you and redirect it for something peaceful. And I think that was a great life philosophy.
Yeah.
I really liked that book because it just little sayings and it's just a little meditation that you do. But I studied Taekwondo, but I only made it to green belt. So I do know about the difference between like the more dynamic movements with the strength-based. Taekwondo has a lot of the counterpoint movement and a lot of strength. And so the fluidity is definitely something that interests me because it's just so beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
And it is choreography. I have some friends who are professional fight choreographers, and that's what it is. It's a dance.
Yeah.
There's all these steps and all these moves. That brings up a lot of questions, though, about your work because there's the choreography part, which I don't know very much about and I'd like to know more of. And also there's the how do you protect your body from injury and train your body with that repetitive strain and motion?
You know, the biggest part of that, I would say, comes from having a proper base. As a dancer, you have a technical base that's usually ballet-based, and you build it up from the ground up. I was really fortunate when I was young to study with William Riley, who worked with the individual student. As I've already said, I don't have huge open hips, so I didn't have one of those first positions that was like a 180-degree line. That was not Sherry. So with me, he said, work on your upper body and make that beautiful and learn how to move that and no one will ever notice what your legs are doing.
Right. That's brilliant.
One of the best lessons I ever got because I have a really beautiful porta bra. I know how to use my torso and my upper body really well. And my legs, you know, they go up, but not as high as some others. And if you look really close, my foot's probably not going to be as turned out as some other people. But by helping me to learn how to use my body and my strengths and my weaknesses, it made my technique strong. as opposed to places where they try and force you to get that 180 degrees. And then when you're young, it kind of ruins your knees.
That would be the stereotype of ballet in general, is that it's very rigid. And if you're not perfectly in step and in position, that you're just going to get beat over the knuckles with a ruler, right?
It can be a little bit. It can be. But it depends on the teacher. It depends on the teacher. And I was really lucky to have such an excellent teacher from the time I was six until I went to college. And then every time I came back home. So even now, if I take a ballet class, even though I don't have the crazy high legs or whatever, the teachers often comment on how strong my technique is. And that is what has helped me last as long as I have. I always tell students when I'm teaching, I'm like, you have to learn how to do an attitude before you can tilt it, twirl it, and roll it on the ground and come back up. And the more you, you know, the more you learn how to use your body properly. And we have a really good technique that Pat has devised for our company as well. Like when we move our arms, we move from the center of our back out. And there's always opposing energy, which actually comes in handy in martial arts too. There's always forces going each direction. It's never just one way or the other. So you're not going to wear out your shoulder just trying to move your arm on its own, because it's coming from the center of your body.
Right.
It's coming from somewhere deeper that's got bigger muscles that's going to help it out, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about mentorship, because you did touch on an important point with that. Getting the right teacher who mm-hmm. can identify your strengths and your weaknesses and coach you through something maybe they learned the hard way with an ACL injury or something like that.
Right.
It makes a big difference. And you teach as well.
I do.
Yeah. Tell me more about the experience of working with students and kids.
I love teaching. I love helping students get something out of themselves they didn't know was there. One of the things that I really love to focus on when I am teaching, especially dance, is storytelling, because it's so important to being a great performer. I think it's one of the reasons that I get away with having my legs a little lower or whatever, because I'm really giving the audience a part of myself. I'm really telling a story, and that's what draws them in. That's the thing that moves people. That's the thing that makes people think. It's not just like, you know, you could have a leg up to the sky, and if there's nothing going on in your face, if you're not giving any energy to the audience, who cares?
Right.
It might be beautiful, but, you know, so is a statue, and that's not going to move me. And yeah. I want to move people. And so I feel like it's really important to teach kids how to do that, to give them the assurance that they are unique and that their story is theirs alone. And that's what they want to share with people. Nobody else has your story. Nobody else has my story.
Right.
You know? So it's very important. And then I also like to do that because I think it, right now, especially with cyberbullying and online craziness and all this, there's a lot going on in the world. They're exposed to a lot. Some of it amazing and some of it very negative. I think it's really important for kids to learn how to express themselves and get some of that emotion out, preferably through an art form, which will be safe and creative and not through some other more rebellious kind of tactics. And I think that they can really learn to live in themselves and feel good about themselves as artists, no matter what their level of technique is, then I think it makes a big difference for them.
Talk to me about dance and dialogue.
Dance and dialogue. Dance and dialogue is this wonderful program started by Rika Glucksman. And basically, she wanted to bring kids of all walks of life, all socioeconomic levels together and have them work as one. Yeah, when we have dance and dialogue, everybody wears the same t-shirt. So you don't necessarily know what school they're from. We mix the schools up so that everybody is just kind of like one melting pot of dancers. And not only do they have master classes, but they have what we call counsel, which is basically people, adults that are trained to sit with them and get them to just kind of express themselves and just learn how to be vulnerable and learn how to share. And then another component of dance and dialogue, because now she's branched out into a bunch of different schools, is just really helping the kids to be community focused. What can I do through my art form for my community? What kind of project can we do to encourage our community? You know, however that may manifest itself, but just like really getting them to be outer focused and not just stay inward.
And it would seem that taking kids and teaching them how to express is helping them put them on the path to healthy adult life.
Yes. Yes.
And the arts are so important for that.
They are.
And
they
the arts are so underrated now.
It's true. And you know what? There are some kids that the arts are the only way they know how to express. The only way. And then you take that away from a kid in a school and they're just kind of pent up all day because they don't know how to express themselves otherwise, you know, unless it's something creative. So I fully agree with you. It is super, super important.
So what is Sherry Washington Roan working on next?
You know,
you have a show going this week, right?
I do. At the Ford Theater, Women Rising. It is an evening of all creations by women choreographers. And so we are presenting a piece called Sweet Nina. The music is Nina Simone. Pat Taylor is our amazing company director. But I believe there's 8 companies performing in the show. And then there's also 2 site-specific pieces that are happening before the show and during intermission, and it's at the Ford Theater. So that's exciting. That's coming up. And then in October, I'll be going to the Palm Springs Women's Dance Festival, which is also all women choreographers. But in addition, it's only female dancers. So anyone can come to the show, but everyone you see on the stage will be a female. So that's exciting. We're actually working on a new piece for that. And then I'll be choreographing for a play, The Bluest Eye, actually, directed by Bernadette Speaks, which is going to be at the Hudson Theater in February. I think it opens actually at the end of January in 2020.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're busy.
I am busy. And I'm looking for colleges for my daughter.
Oh, many parents can relate to that.
That's... Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I try and keep going. I try and keep doing things I love. I do the martial arts. I dance. I don't want to stop because I know once you stop, it's really hard to get back going. I'm not afraid to say I'm 49. So it's, you know, if I stop doing those things, then I'm done. You know what I mean? And I don't want to be done yet. I still find it satisfying. I still find I can do it. So I'm just going to keep pushing as long as I can and then listen to my body and sit down and ice my knees if I have to.
Well, you look 32 and you sound 19. Thank you. So let me help you get some voiceover work here. Let's hear some of your voiceover tones.
Some of my voiceover tones. Well, one of my favorite is The Evil Witch. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. That's always fun. And then it's always fun to do like M&M's, speak from your heart with a little bit of chocolate. Something random like that. You know, I like doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Where can people reach you if they want to connect with your work or if they want to see some examples of your choreography?
I am on Instagram under Festive Sherry. I am on Facebook, SherryRoan.com. I'm working on my website. And then you can always email me at SWR@SherryRoan, R-H-O-N-E. Sorry, Sherry is S-H-A-R-I, R-H-O-N-E.com.
Well, I am so excited to see you again. And thank you for agreeing to come and be on the Language of Creativity podcast. It was my honor to have you as a guest.
Thank you for having me. I really love being here.
Since the first episode of this podcast, we've been featuring music from Lobate Scarp in its unfinished format. But we are really excited to announce that this song, Nothing Wrong, is officially available today. If you like what you hear, please support this podcast by following the link in the show notes.
Welcome to your day. You'll find out what you are looking for. but you